There's an important topic every married couple needs to discuss. Nancy Lee DeMoss found herself stirring up this topic not long ago.
Well, I met a new couple at church last Sunday and began talking with them. He said that he was 30 years old and she looked to be close to that age, and we were just getting to know each other. They had been married 3 years and both have their jobs, and I said to them, "Do you have any children yet?" And they said, "No." And then they looked at me like this was a subject that they had been discussing real recently.
This is Revive Our Hearts with Nancy Lee DeMoss for Monday, November 8th. If you've been waiting for the right time to have children, how do you know your body will still be ready when that time comes? Nancy and some guests will address this topic that was affecting the couple at Nancy's church.
And I smiled and I said to them, "I'm reading a book that you need to read." And the book was called Start Your Family: Inspiration for Having Babies. It's by Stephen Candace Waters, and I've just had my nose in this book, could hardly put it down over the last several days, and I'm delighted to have with us here on Revive Our Hearts today, Steve and Candace, to talk with us about this subject and to hear, Steve and Candace, what you would want to say to a couple like this couple who is obviously thinking and praying about God's plan for their family. So thank you for writing this book, and thank you for being here with us on Revive Our Hearts.
Oh, thank you so much. This is a privilege.
It is great to be here, Nancy. And I think we were probably that couple, maybe not that old, but when we got married, we thought we want kids. It was something we knew we'd always wanted. And early in our marriage, my sister announced that she was pregnant, and she and her husband had been married quite a bit longer. And I was stunned at how all of a sudden that's all I wanted. And we had only been married about 4 months. And I think it freaked Steve out a little bit.
I want to hear more about how this unfolded 4 months into your marriage and the journey that the Lord took you on to having the 4 children that you now have. But let me introduce you first to our listeners. Steve, you're the director of young adults at Focus on the Family, a ministry that we love and respect. I have so much admiration for. And Candace, you've been involved in various types of ministry at Focus on the Family at one time and now doing freelance writing and editing. But as you told me a few moments ago, you're doing more changing diapers now.
That's right.
That's top on your job description,
it
right?
It is, yes. What little writing I have time for is primarily for focusisboundless.org. But yes, lots of diapers.
So you all have been on a journey that involved college education, grad school, marriage, career, and now we're writing about this high and holy calling of choosing to have children. So back to you've been married 4 months, and you see your sister having a child.
Well, yes, and here we had just gotten married, and we wanted kids. We had talked about it when we were dating. We knew we both valued children, and I'm one of 5, and so to me, a lot of kids seemed normal. And I also had just started my career. I'd just gotten my master's degree, and I was starting to work at Focus, and Steve had a great job at Focus, and we were able to work together to launch this webzine. And yet, when I heard that Katie was expecting, something inside of me clicked. It was like there was something about the way God made me that I hadn't really touched before. And I think it was a little bit intimidating to Steve.
When did you bring it up?
The minute I got off the phone, because I think I started bawling, and he said, "Honey, what's wrong?" And, you know, she's going to have a baby. And he's thinking,
this is supposed to be a happy thing.
Exactly. And he said, "What's wrong?" And I said, "I want one too." And I didn't expect to feel it that strongly that soon.
And as the words came out of her mouth, Steve, what went through your mind?
Well, I was thinking, is this something down the road? Because we had a lot of conversations about things we wanted. And I think most couples have a certain sense of a timeline that we think, you know, what would probably be right would be a couple of years.
And is that what you had been thinking, roughly?
Well, that. And, I mean, you hear people throw around numbers like 5 years into a marriage is a good time to get to know each other. And we had just moved out to Colorado, had some exploring to do out there. And also, we had a lot of debt. We joke and say that when we got married, it was, "Will you graduate loan, take this Visa card," because we brought all this debt together and we're trying to figure out how we're going to get all that paid off. And so it is easy to think, well, there are some things we should do first. to enjoy our marriage, enjoy the state, and get some debt paid off, and then maybe down the road, that'd be good. And so I guess my first thought was trying to get a sense of timing, because we knew we wanted kids at some point, but it just didn't seem like the right time then. And so that was my shock, is when I would press in and she was saying, no, I'd like to have a baby now.
So this desire didn't go away.
Well, you know, he did help me push the pause button on my biological clock and talked me down, I think, from that emotional high, and talked some sense into me. At the time, it seemed like sensible to wait and to pay off some debt, and we wanted to buy a house, and we wanted to put my degree to use for a while and felt like that would be the good stewardship thing to do. And it was at that point that the couple that mentored us before we got married came to visit, and they said, so why aren't you having kids? When
right
are you
going
to have kids? They were of the hurry-up mindset, and it kind of brought that back up and that sense of urgency, and it was like the Holy Spirit was prompting something, and having this older couple there to bounce my ideas off of, to hear this wonderfully mature Christian woman say, yeah, now would be a good time. What are your concerns? And so I started laying out for her all the financial concerns and the career path and those kinds of things. And she just looked at me and said, Candace, how do you know when you decide you're ready that you're still going to be fertile? And it was like a bucket of cold water. Nobody had ever asked me that question, not my Christian parents, not my pastors, not my Christian doctor. I had never wrestled with the notion. I had never thought through that there might be some limits to my fertility. And you have to remember, Nancy, this was before the cover story on Newsweek and before all the headlines we've been seeing in the last 5 years about fertility. This was really before all of that started to break. And so I was shocked, and I realized, whoa, I have a stewardship not just of my college and graduate degrees, but I have a stewardship of my fertility. This was a totally foreign concept.
And how old were you at the time?
I was 28.
Mm-hmm.
So you hadn't thought that if we wait 5 years, 6 years, 10 years, that this could have implications in terms of your fertility?
I didn't, and why would I? Because all of the magazine covers trumpet these stories of women who've had their first baby at 40. And I think most of us as women don't stop to think, oh, they're news for a reason. They're news because they're the exception. And certainly the fertility clinics don't want you to realize or don't want you to know how hard it gets the older you get, because it's a very lucrative business. One round of IVF can be as much as $12,000. And so what a deception for a young woman to think, I can wait because I need to build my career and I need to pay off debt and I need to get set financially so that what? I can go pay some doctor $20,000, $40,000 plus to try to conceive a baby now that my body is kind of on the tiring outside and the eggs are getting old. And I just hadn't thought intentionally about that.
Well, and we hadn't thought about it because we got married at the average age. It wasn't like we got married really late, because we were just about to turn 27, and we found out later that's pretty much about the average age for men and women to get married.
Anymore it is.
Yeah.
Used to be younger.
That's right. I mean, even though our parents had gotten married in their early 20s, we felt we were, you know, chugging along at the average age, and so we had no sense of urgency.
So how did your journey unfold? This mentor said to you, you need to think in terms of your fertility.
Right.
How did you walk through the journey, and what did you decide?
Well, they are a wonderful, rugged couple that likes to go hiking, and the more wild, the better. And we went out for a hike, and that's when Mary and I were talking. Well, behind us were Steve and Hugh, and they were talking, and I think Steve could overhear some of our conversation and maybe got a little bit nervous.
Well, yeah. In the book, we say that, you know, there's a sign along the hiking path that says, beware of rattlesnakes. And I think I was more frightened of the conversation they were having, all this stuff about fertility and babies and timing. But when we got back to the apartment and really spent some time going in depth, and I was able to bring up all the concerns that I had, and especially when I would bring up the financial concerns, I really felt like I was showing stewardship, that I was saying, it really makes sense to get in a better financial position. And they said, you know, budget for everything except kids, because babies are wealth. And they change the whole dynamic of stuff. It's not like leasing a car or buying a pet or something like that. This is eternity you're talking about. You can't use the same kind of cost-benefit analysis that you would use for any other major purchase. And since then, we've heard so many couples say, you will never be able to afford kids. So go ahead and get started. Don't wait for these greener financial pastures that are always going to put it further and further into the future.
Were there other concerns you had besides the financial one about having a baby that early?
Well, it was really easy to focus on financial things because I wasn't going to come out and say, you know what I really like is being able to go out and have a date on a moment's notice and to be able to have Candace all to myself and not to have to share her with babies and to not have to grow up really, because for me, getting married wasn't as much of a shock to the system as becoming a dad in terms of the new responsibilities and what it means to really be a provider. And
to sacrifice.
Yeah.
Well, and it made a huge difference for us to have this conversation with a mentor couple whom we trusted, because I was able to hear Steve's concerns and his anxieties about stepping up as a provider and a protector. And I don't know that I realized just how much responsibility he perceived dadhood to be. And I think women anticipate children with different fears and anxieties, but maybe don't often understand what a man is facing when he thinks about becoming a dad. And suddenly all of the burdens of earning are on him. Because here I was earning half the money and sharing equally. I mean, we had a very partnership kind of marriage. We, you know, were glorified roommates, if you will, and children really changed all of that. And so I think after that conversation, I knew Steve had a new openness to the Spirit and to what God wanted to do. And I think we both did. And so I don't know that it took much more than maybe a week after that conversation for Steve to say, you know, I think I'm ready to start trying to have a baby.
Well, and they were a countercultural couple, too, because they were the age of our parents. But other people whose parents were their age were telling them, you know what, I think we got married and had kids too young, and we're telling our kids now to wait, to really pay off all their debt, to really spend a lot of time getting to know each other and then start a family.
So a lot of parents are giving that counsel to their younger children.
That's right. But this couple recognized just how important this is in the scheme of things, that from a kingdom perspective, this is something you want to be intentional about and not keep pushing off later and later, not only from a fertility standpoint, but just in the sense of this is kingdom work that we're talking about, and this is going to grow you. There are spiritual formation issues at stake here in terms of how you're going to see the world around you differently, what God wants to do through you by giving you this new responsibility and blessing. And we appreciate that they were willing to say something different from what a lot of their peers were telling other people our age.
And you use the term countercultural there. I don't know that there's any message that we talk about on Revive Our Hearts that is any more countercultural than this one. And in the book, you talk about the cultural trend that you call PAR.
Right.
Describe that for us.
Well, we are reading a book by David Brooks called On Paradise Drive, and he says, you know, especially for someone who lives in the suburbs, the idea of PAR that's in golf is this mindset of your life in order. Everything's in balance. You've got a neatly organized closet. Your garage is organized, and you live this life where everything's buttoned up and put together.
Just like the catalogs.
Exactly.
All the pictures. It's
like a Pottery Barn catalog.
There are no people in those catalogs.
No children, for sure.
No.
But he said the thing that's the threat to PAR in the suburbs is children, because then they change everything. And now everything's messy. And, you know, we think of the song by Stephen Curtis Chapman where he's talking about, I got balls and bats in my yard and I got a spaceman in my seat. And, you know, and it's messy and it's just stuff everywhere. But that's the tension, is the illusion of PAR and your life totally in order and that kind of design that you control. And then there's fruitfulness where everything's messy and it's out of your control, but it's life.
And that's probably even true as it relates to physical aspects of a woman's body and saying PAR is having the perfect model's body.
The muscle tone and the clothes and the makeup and
And what do children do to that, Candace?
Let's just say I don't buy many things that say dry clean only anymore.
Well, and we love how Frank Lloyd Wright says, you know, you got form and function. When, you know, he was an architect and he was interested in design. And you think about our bodies. And our culture loves to concentrate on form. It's all about having the perfect body. But there's an important function, especially for a woman's body, that gets overlooked. And Frank Lloyd Wright says form and function should be combined in the spiritual union. And we realize God designed our bodies to be joined in the spiritual union of form and function. But even among Christians, there's a wedge there between wanting what the culture values in terms of the form of the perfect body and then overlooking the fruitfulness of the functions that are available for new life.
Nancy, when I had our daughter, our second, I recorded a broadcast with Focus on the Family about body image. It just so happened to fall right about the time I had had Zoe. And so I was several sizes bigger than what I was comfortable being. And nothing really fit well. And I probably had a little bit of spit up on my sweater going into the studio. And yet I remember being in that studio thinking, I finally feel comfortable in my own skin. And I had struggled for so long feeling self-conscious and even self-loathing about my body because it didn't measure up to the cultural standards. And all of a sudden, it was like, God, you made my body to give life. And this is so much bigger and so much richer and so much more. It's mysterious that suddenly I could feel at peace with who I was because I was finally letting God do through me what he made me to do.
And I'm sitting here watching you, Candace, with tears in your eyes, which our listeners can't see. Mm. But what you're really reflecting on is what Scripture says, and that is that children are a blessing from the Lord.
Absolutely.
And we have really not defined them that way in our culture. We've talked in terms of the cost, the sacrifice, the pain, the change, the ways that they upset the norm. But you talk about, and you've experienced in your own lives, that children do bring blessing to a family.
They do. And I think it's tragic because our culture has so warped and twisted God's idea for the family. They've warped and undermined the idea of authority and the idea of discipline and the idea of spiritual headship and all of these principles that go into making a godly home where the children can be a blessing. I know families where their kids aren't a blessing because they're totally undisciplined, and my heart grieves for them because they're missing out on the beauty of what family can be. And so it's not enough to say just make the babies an instant blessing. This is a lifelong process, and it really does require submitting ourselves as parents to God's design and growing in oneness as a couple and working as a team and seeing these children not just as the status symbol, you know, as the new thing that everybody's doing, as sort of following what Hollywood says is the hip new trend. This isn't about babies as status symbol. This is about fruitfulness for the kingdom and souls that actually have the potential to be with you for eternity, for the rest of forever.
And I think that's one of the things that really struck me so powerfully about this book, Candace and Steve, is that you say over and over again, it's really not about us.
Mm-hmm.
It's about God and his glory and his kingdom. And this is a calling. This is a holy calling to bear and raise children for the glory of God. So it furthers his kingdom. But then something else that is maybe a subpoint of that is, and I caught this in the foreword by Kurt Bruner, mm-hmm. where he talked about people who want to be conformed to the image of Jesus, mm-hmm. and he teaches spiritual formation. And here at Revive Our Hearts, we're very interested in seeing our lives shaped to become like Christ. But this man who wrote the foreword to your book said, I don't know of any single thing that will further this cause in your life more than parenthood.
Yeah, you know, Candace and I thought we were fairly altruistic, selfless people.
Till you had children.
We were so mature until we had children.
It's not that people who don't have kids are utterly selfish. It's just that they haven't had as much of a crucible experience of being forced on a regular basis to be other-centered. That, you know, people who go on mission trips, people who, you know, work to serve the poor and the down and out – can put themselves in some situations where they're in more of a pressure cooker. People who really take on just being sold out and available to God can get in those environments. But for the average person, it's not until they're responsible for another life and this life is looking to them
24/7.
On a regular basis that they finally get to start working out these servant muscles. And, you know, we were thinking as we were writing the book, we find ourselves going through these days where we do more selfless acts than we would have accumulated in a month before kids. But it's not even like we expect to be treated special for it. It's just because that's the job description. And I started realizing it's almost the difference between someone who heroically goes out and saves somebody's life and then an EMT who does that as their job. And that's really what parenting is. You have to lay your life down. And so that's why if being conformed to the image of God means like the Philippians 2 model of looking to Christ's sacrifice on the cross and then we lay our lives down, then parenting is one of the daily opportunities to lay our lives down.
And to have exposed, brought to the surface, all that flesh inside that. I remember a woman saying to me years ago, she had a set of twins, and then like within a year or a year and a half had a third child, and they were all real little when she said to me, I was never an angry or impatient woman until I had these three children.
That's right.
And I said to that woman, I probably didn't say exactly these words, but the gist was, you were an angry, impatient woman all along. You just didn't know it until you had those little ones to push your buttons.
Well, we like to say it's almost like the family is a reality show that none of us would have the stomach to watch.
I mean, if you're the real family.
That's right.
Exactly.
So how have you seen God use children? The Lord's blessed you with four here on earth, one in heaven.
Right.
How have you seen the Lord use children to deal with those rough edges, to sanctify you, to put you in a crucible, and you see good things for the glory of God coming out of that?
Well, I'm thankful that God has a sense of humor because he sent us children who, every time we memorize a new scripture verse, it seems like the very next day there's an opportunity for them to say, now, Mommy, I thought that verse said. And they really
sandpaper,
are.
Sandpaper, little heavenly sandpaper there.
Yeah.
They are watching. And so observing that they are paying such close attention to how we walk out our faith and knowing that how we walk out our faith has a lot to do with whether or not they will follow in those footsteps is a constant reality check, and it drives me to my knees. I've never been more desperate to be in the Word, and I've never had less time to do it. It's the irony of motherhood. You know, you have maybe 30 seconds, and so you're reading quickly or you're just praying to God for a little bit more time because I'm desperate for truth to be able to pass that on to them and to testify to the truth to them so that they will look to Jesus. I mean, that is the cry of my heart and now the mission of my life. And yet it's so much fun because as they get older, I think there aren't any other people I'd rather be with. You know, we love to be together and play games and lately turn on the iPod and they'll say, well, let's get this song. And you just buy it for 99 cents right there in the moment. And all of a sudden we're all dancing or riding our pretend horses around the house or whatever it is. They're just fun, funny people and they make us laugh. And so there is the spiritual side and the training side and the discipline side and the hard side. And yes, it's a wearying, bone-wearying job, but it is delightful as they start to grasp the things of God and as they do start to submit to the discipline of being well-mannered children, you know, being likable. And the more that they're likable, the more we want to be with them.
And that's why I'm recommending this book, not only to young couples who are considering if and when to start a family, but to older couples and those whose children are older and to singles, because you get at the heart of conformity into the image of Christ. Whatever season of life God has put you in, he wants to use the hard things, the submission, the embracing of his will, the relinquishing and laying down of rights to perfect in us the likeness of Jesus and really to revive our hearts. We want to come back to this conversation, and I know our listeners are going to want to join us again tomorrow as we talk more about God's way of thinking about this countercultural, radical idea of having children for the glory of God.
The conversation between Nancy Lee DeMoss and Steve and Candace Waters has raised some important questions. To think these questions through further, I hope you'll get a copy of the book, Start Your Family. It will be a thought-provoking guide as you or someone you know thinks through important questions about having a family. It will encourage you to bring a biblical mindset to the time, money, and commitment involved in raising a family. When you donate any amount to Revive Our Hearts, we'll send you a copy of Start Your Family. Call with your donation at 1-800-569-5959. That's 1-800-569-5959. Or donate at reviveourhearts.com. You know, here's one question that pops up after a discussion like today's. What about the world's population? Isn't it too crowded already? Nancy will address that with the Waters tomorrow. Please join us again for Revive Our Hearts. Revive Our Hearts is an outreach of Life Action Ministries.